Welcome to episode 134 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live July 12th, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, we dive right into the changes to the Microsoft Partner Program. We follow that up with a nifty little tool, the Office 365 Bandwidth Meter, and some news around PowerShell and Azure policy. All right, this is Ben again. This is becoming a habit. This is 2 weeks in a row now. Definitely not one I want to keep going, but had to jump in here and give you a precursor to this episode. So last week, when we had recorded this episode, we decided we would talk all about the changes to the Microsoft Partner Program, specifically some of the changes they were making, some of the internal use rights software they were removing, technical supports and incidents, that type of thing. Literally about 3 or 4 hours after we recorded, Microsoft rolled back their changes. So a lot of the information, the discussion we had around what was actually removed was reversed and added back into the partner program. So if you're listening to this, we're going to keep the discussion in because it was still a really interesting discussion we had about the whole partnership program, internal use rights software, all of that. If you don't care about that, or if now that the changes have been reversed and you get all your benefits back, you don't care about it, skip to about 15 minutes or so through the episode, about halfway through where we dove into some of the news. If you do want to hear the discussion, the first 15 minutes or so will be all about those partnership program changes that were announced and then later reversed around internal use rights software and some of the technical support incidents. So thanks again and enjoy the episode. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. Happy Friday.
It's another one.
Every week.
It's funny how that works.
I know. I'm pretty sure we've started an episode with that before. We need to come up with more creative ways to start our episode.
All right. Well, we'll form a commission and put you on that.
Happy 712.
And then we'll do a AMA on it.
Yesterday, you could have gotten free slushies at 7-Eleven. Do they still do that?
They do. Well, it's not a slushie. It's a Slurpee.
A Slurpee.
That shows how much you know about 7-Eleven.
You know, I've gotten one every once in a while, but 7-Eleven has not been on my frequently visited convenience store list.
Oh, come on. 7-E's?
Nope. Sorry.
Well, life goals for you.
Go to 7-Eleven more?
Yeah.
Yeah, still not high up on the list.
Get a Slurpee and a sugar high occasionally.
Or give my kids a sugar high so that they crash and sleep at night.
Yeah.
Is that how that works? You give them a sugar high so they sleep better?
Yes. You try it out. Let me know how it goes.
Perfect. I will do that. Speaking of other highs, partners are coming off of a high to a crashing low. Well, at least Microsoft partners.
They're about to go into a high or a low, depending on where they are and how much news they read.
Yeah. Or maybe they need a high after, no, we're not going to condone that, after reading the news.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was an interesting week in Microsoft partner land.
Yeah, there's a couple of changes coming to IURs or internal use rights. And I would think that just a couple of folks who listen to this podcast participate in the program directly, or they work for an employer who participates in that program. Either way, changes are afoot.
Yes. And I don't know that we even talked about this. I just became an official silver partner, like as of a month ago-ish, I think. Maybe a month and a half ago. It was a bad time to become a partner, apparently.
Well, maybe it was a good time.
Although I snuck in, it was a good time. It gave me a year of benefits before I have to reevaluate my life goals.
Yeah. You get a little bit of time to figure this one out. So
what are these changes that came crashing down to partners based on IURs?
What?
From your understanding, because there is apparently a lot of different understandings and people talking and some unclarity, because we're actually recording this right before Inspire. Inspire's like 3 days from now, or does it start Sunday? I don't know. 2 or 3 days from now, where I'm sure there might be some more clarity, but there was a lot of uncertainty this week.
Yeah. So IURs were basically licenses that were allocated to you as a partner to go ahead and run your business. So you could certainly think about maybe being a Microsoft partner and needing to deploy software to do tests and demonstrations. That's a thing that happens. And you know, you were allocated licensing for that as a partner, and you were also allocated licensing that you could actually, like I said, use for day-to-day business. So think maybe on-premises licensing. Maybe you know, wanted to run Exchange. You wanted to run your own mail server, or you were going to the cloud and you were in Office 365, and maybe you're a partner who does Office services and you would like to really know how Teams works. Well, one of the best ways to understand how Teams works is to use that product day to day for your own business. And then maybe take that information forward to your customers rather than just demos, which can be a little kind of contrived sometimes. You know, you don't exactly get a feel for the way these things work just by always doing them in demoware. Like we all can't be Contoso and be successful. So IURs gave you the ability to do that. There was a couple other things in the partner program that you also got as well. If you think about maybe support for some of those on-prem workloads, or the ability to escalate support tickets, basically free support tickets with Microsoft in the paid support tier, you as a partner would be able to drive that forward just a little bit and get it to where it needs to be. So the changes really that are coming is Microsoft has announced that effective July 1, 2020, so you do have a year of time if you are a partner, IURs are going away. So basically the way it's kind of been described and the way it reads, unless there's infinitely more clarification around it, because like you said, it's a little fuzzy right now, you are going to have to purchase commercial licenses to run your business, and then you'll still have licenses for demonstration purposes, solution development, service development, whatever it is, even internal training, you'll still get those licenses. The licenses you get will be changing though, because they'll be kind of blocked into the competencies that you have. So for instance, I'll throw one out there, and I don't know if this is right, wrong, whatever it is, but say you were in a competency where you never did anything with Dynamics, you might actually get Dynamics licensing as your IUR today. Well, in the future, if you're not in a competency with Dynamics, why should you have Dynamics licensing, or why should you not pay for Dynamics licensing? I think is a little bit of the background to drive that forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I've seen some different things too about what that actually means, and I think the biggest one that's going to hit people with this is the Office 365 licensing, especially when it comes to running your business. Because like I said, like a year and a half, or a week and a half ago, month and a half ago, one of those time frames, I joined that partner program. And as soon as I joined Silver, if I didn't have any competencies, I got so many Office 365 licenses just right out of the gate. So any Silver partner, no matter the competency, got those 365 licenses for Exchange, SharePoint, Teams, the whole suite. It was an E3 license, so desktop version of Office, all of that. Once I got my cloud productivity competency, I got a whole bunch of E5 licenses. I've seen different things too going through this, that those core competency internal use rights may be going away before July 21. There's some stuff about like realigning product licenses based on that competency already towards the end of this year. And then coming July 1 of 2020, they're getting rid of all the IURs. So again, some of this is a little fuzzy, as does that mean like 3 months from now, all those core licenses are going to go away and you're only going to get licenses related directly to your competency, or does that mean, kind of like you said, they're going to pull some of those out of those competencies, like some of the dynamic stuff or some of those other services not related? It's really, that's where it gets fuzzy for me, is when all these different internal use rights licenses are going to get removed, because it sounds like it's going to happen in phases based on those core licenses you get just by default as being a silver partner, and then those licenses that you get as part of your core competency. I've even heard that core competency internal use rights would stay around from somebody, that as long as you have a competency, those licenses you can keep using for your business. That, based on everything else I've seen, doesn't appear to be true.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we'll have to see where it falls out at Inspire. There's been a bunch of kind of side movement on this with people just trying to figure out what's going on, right? From, you know, the Mary J. Foley's and ZDNets of the world to ICAMP, kind of like international channel partners and all those kinds of things to figure out where things stand. I'll put a bunch of links in the show notes if you want to go out and get some more background on where this is going, or if you're not maybe just dialed in to Inspire, but you are a partner and you're like, huh, I haven't heard about this one. There's some telemetry that drives that, at least from Microsoft side, is what it seems like. You know, there's a couple of figures in there. Like, they talk to having on the order of 9,000 plus new partners signing up every single month. So when you think about 9,000 new companies, even if that's a one person company coming in, and like you said, buying this license pack, like they come in and they actually purchase Action Pack or something like that, and then they get this IUR. Well, when they start consuming, you know, it's just kind of money out the door to sit there. And the partner program, where you think, hey, it's all Microsoft, they still have to buy their services from internal Microsoft, right? From the people who actually run the Azure data centers and run Office 365 as a service and all those kinds of things. So it is money that goes out. I don't know where it all falls out, and I'm sure Microsoft has a way to rationalize it and put it all together, but they've never been good at handing out bad news. Like, that's just not something that Microsoft Communications has ever excelled at. Empathy isn't always a thing that's there for them. We'll see where it all comes and kind of falls down. I think one of the things that will happen is, if this does come to fruition in its current form, you are going to have partners today. Like you said, maybe you're sitting out there on E5s and you are actively using those day to day and you are learning about them, and then you're carrying forward that knowledge to your customers. When it becomes you having to buy a commercial license for an E5, when you're going to look at that and take a step back, you might actually say, well, E5s are nice, but they're not that nice. So maybe you step down to E3s. Or, you know, like we talked about a couple weeks ago with the friends don't let friends buy Office 365 business. I bet this actually forces a lot of partners into positions where they downgrade to Office 365 business. it's not a great place to be.
Right. It'll be interesting because, and it's not even like Microsoft says, well, we can't give away free licenses. Yeah, you're giving... They're not giving away free licenses, they're giving away discounted licenses. In all honesty, it cost me $1,800 to be a silver partner of a year. I'm paying them money. And they're kind of changing what you're getting for that money, is the way they're phrasing this.
Here's the thing, though. Like, you're equating spending that money with them to your licensing. That money is everything. That money is marketing. It's the entire partner program. It's any kind of like investment funds that they do for partners.
Yep.
Like, you might not get those investment funds, right? Because maybe you're not a partner who's big enough, or you don't just know the right people, or whatever it is. But there is a pool of money on the back end that drives all this. It's also all the spend for the conferences and all the other things, right? The partner program itself is a business. So it can't 100% be an overhead kind of thing. It probably certainly doesn't need to be revenue generating. I don't really know how Microsoft views that on the back end and where it falls out, but I bet they view it at least as wanting to be a break even
right
sort of business. So onboarding thousands and thousands of new partners every month with your cloud consumption going up. I would bet it's really the cloud consumption that kills them.
I think that's it. It's got to be that Office 365 consumption.
Yeah. There were a couple of kind of quotes out there for run rates and where Microsoft is at. So like one of them was Microsoft is currently incurring about $200 million in costs annually. And of course, that's growing again because you got all these new partners coming in, resulting from services being used by partners via IUR. So $200 million annual cost, that sounds a lot like cloud, right? That's probably Office 365 consumption.
Right.
Just to be honest, right? Like that's O365, Intune, and Dynamics. Boom, right there. So $200 million in growing run rate. All right, well now take all your spend from all those partners coming into the partner program and then figure out all the other programs and things that they're doing. And it's a weird place
for
them to be. It's not small
cost.
Like I said, it's just Microsoft is not good at giving bad news. And it's particularly bad news when something you have had for free for potentially years and years and years and years is going away.
Yes, I agree. And like you said, it was a lot of the delivery mechanism. Had they been a lot more clear. Like they announced this on the 5th of July, right after the 4th of July in the US on a Friday. And then they were like quiet for a week. They're just like, hey, they're all going away. And nobody could find out any more information about it. And now they've started talking about it a little more. So again, they're saying, hey, your benefits are going to change. It's just not going to be IURs. We're going to give you other stuff. It'll be interesting to see how much that other stuff, how much partners value that other stuff. Again, someone like me, I may look at it in another year and say, you know what, the other stuff, me being a small shop, isn't worth it. Some people said maybe this is them trying to funnel that down, going from those 7,000-8,000 new partners of single person shops of two or three and trying to focus more on bigger partners. We'll just have to see where it goes. But if you are a partner, there's even a petition out on change.org for this that has like 6,000 signatures now for disapproving partner changes.
Yeah, you can disapprove it, but ultimately
it's not going to change.
Yeah, it's not your thing to change, right?
Right.
I would be willing to bet they've rationalized this change and they've obviously thought about it, right? They wouldn't announce it.
This wasn't a weak decision. This was something they've probably been thinking about for at least a year, I would guess.
Yeah, it is what it is. So I think everyone should pay attention to Inspire, and maybe we can kind of wrap back up on this one after next week and see if they've done a better job of selling that, right? Because they've been selling free effectively what partners view as free stuff for a while now, and they've got to figure out a way to now sell commercial to them.
Yep. Like you said, partner program is still a business. They've got to figure out how to sell this to their partners now, and we'll round it back out. Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info. So, enough ranting and raving. We didn't do too bad, though. I don't think we ranted too much on that.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, there's some other news. Moving on to non-partner stuff. There is a nifty tool out there that both of us seem to have missed that's actually been out there now for 8 months. And this is going to come in handy with some of my clients that, again, I don't know how we missed it. I didn't realize it was out here, but there is an Office 365 network bandwidth meter out in GitHub now that you can use to, it's not going to give you bandwidth before you start deploying Office 365, but it helps you start monitoring bandwidth once it's deployed. It's essentially PowerShell scripts that you can run on your end user devices, and it captures a bunch of bandwidth information, processes that consume bandwidth, bandwidth used by a machine over a period of time, bandwidth used in connections to a specific port, So a lot of those Office 365 services have ports or different ways you can monitor them that way. And IP address range, which obviously Microsoft knows all the endpoints. We can look at endpoints of traffic going to Office 365, geolocation of endpoints. All of this data can now be captured from end-user devices with this PowerShell script and actually written out to an Azure Log Analytics workspace.
Yep. So I'm going to dial you back for just a second there.
No, stop. You can dial me back.
So, like you said, it's a solution that is based on log analytics and data stored in log analytics, specifically data that is collected from clients through the Microsoft Monitoring Agent, MMA, and the Dependency Agent, the DA. And those two, when they're installed, come together and give you the ability to go ahead and turn on a solution inside a log analytics workspace called Service Map. So we're going to have a link to the GitHub repo out here for this one. So there is a PowerShell script, but the PowerShell script isn't the thing that sends the data. What the PowerShell script does for you, though, is it generates a bunch of log analytics queries. So you can onboard clients to log analytics, and it doesn't need to be a server. It could be an end user's desktop, right? You've got that remote user, and you know, maybe you're a business that does, you know, you do stuff all over the world. So maybe you pick one of your salespeople in North America, and you pick one in EMEA, and you pick one in APAC, right? You take that person in Australia or New Zealand, you load up these two agents onto their PCs, and then their PCs send that telemetry to Log Analytics. And then you can use this solution to generate the queries for Log Analytics, which are going to help you visualize all those data points that you talked about, right? Bandwidth used to connect to a specific port, bandwidth used by the machine over a period of time, bandwidth used to connect to a specific IP address, things like that. So really the solution is Microsoft has given you basically all of the answers for how to write those queries and just have those queries outright ready to go. Now, the cool thing they've done about this is they've actually broken them down where you can even go into these queries and once you have the data in Log Analytics, start to query by service. So maybe you look at like Exchange Online, or you get in and you start looking at something like SharePoint Online or OneDrive for Business, because you can actually drive those out based on the computer that connected and like destination IP address ranges, right? If it falls into this Microsoft range that is known to be used for Office 365, well, we can infer that, hey, that's, you know, OneDrive or SharePoint or Exchange or Skype or Teams or whatever it happens to be along the way. So you're talking kind of minimal data usage and things to get the data up there. The other nice thing they've given you is because you have those queries, so those queries can be tabular or they can be charted. So then you could take those and maybe build out an Azure dashboard that you could actually have to kind of show client health over time, at least for those users, those clients, whatever they happen to be. And then they've also given you sample Power BI dashboards for that as well. So Power BI has the ability to connect to Log Analytics workspaces. So cool. So all those queries and data models and everything have been built for you already. So you can actually just load that right into Power BI desktop and publish it out to a workspace and have data that way as well. So in the background, you've constantly got your clients kind of churning and pushing data into Log Analytics, and then you're doing this analysis on the front end on the Azure side, maybe through Azure or through Power BI, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, and this follows a lot what Microsoft says. I've had clients ask me, they're like, so how much bandwidth do I need once I go to Office 365? And it kind of depends. Like Microsoft has tried to do these bandwidth calculators before where it's based on what you're using now, this is how much bandwidth you're going to need. But there's so many variables that come into play in terms of email, if you're going to start using SharePoint, if you're going to use Teams, that really a lot of Microsoft's guidance that I have started to see that a lot of people are using is, let's go deploy a few or migrate a few clients, put a few clients in Office 365, and then monitor this bandwidth usage, and then kind of use that as a baseline, as a guide to extrapolate out to, now we have 5,000 users. Let's take this data we captured from 50 or 100 users to kind of calculate what that bandwidth is going to look like once we move everybody. And this helps with that by establishing some of those baselines for those clients that you've already migrated. So this isn't going to help you before you migrated. It's going to help you monitor those pilot users so that you can kind of extrapolate that data out to maybe thousands of users or tens of thousands of users or however many you plan to end up with out there.
Correct. And then take everything that we just said for the last couple minutes, and every time we said measure bandwidth for Office 365, replace that with anything that sits on the internet, like any PaaS or SaaS service. So maybe you're not an Office 365 shop, but you do use Dropbox or Box or something like that, and you're interested in understanding kind of usage for those or really kind of bandwidth needs for those. Awesome. Same kind of thing, right? Because all we're doing is filtering based on IP address ranges and some other logic in those queries. So you can use this for much a solution like this, kind of thought process for much more than just Office 365.
So could you even do this, as I'm sitting here reading this and thinking about it, this as kind of planning? Because for that matter, you also know if you have Exchange on-prem, your Exchange on-prem endpoint. So you could even use this for on-prem solutions, I'm assuming, as long as you
sure
set those filters properly and, again, filter by that endpoint of your Exchange yep on-prem server or your SharePoint on-prem server or one of those to gauge existing bandwidth just with on-prem traffic right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at a lot of the queries, they are just basically, there's columns within that schema, within kind of those namespaces and those tables within log analytics. So destination IP address is, it's just that, right? It's a string that's hanging out there. So do the string match or contains or whatever it happens to be, and boom, you're up and running.
Yeah. Nifty solution that has been out there for 8 months and we just now ran across.
Yeah. Well, the other cool thing that's in that repo as well is they have a copy of a deck in there that they just kind of took and dumped to PDF, but it is a consolidated list of links for all the bandwidth calculators for Office 365, all the, you know, Exchange client, Skype client, the network planner, all that kind of stuff is in there with examples. And then, you know, they've got a little bit of the backstory around how they came to this solution. So it can give you some more information on why it's out there and why it exists.
All right. Nice. Looks good. Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. So any other news topics you ran across that you want to talk about today? Not yes, we have more episodes, Scott. This is not our last episode, so you can talk about more next week. Anything else you want to talk about today?
So one more real quick, we can kind of close out on a happy note. So I don't know if everybody is familiar with the cloud advocates at Microsoft or like the IT pro advocates, but one of them is Sonia Cuff, and she's out in Australia. You should go check her out. She is awesome. She wrote a blog post on the tech community about Azure policy, which I thought was a really good one, because when we talk about governance in Azure and we talk about policy specifically, we quite often talk about it in the context of denying actions or kind of putting up these barriers or these walls to services being deployed or things of a certain size being stood up or anything else like that. But she's got a nice little blog post out there and some samples that were put into the AZ policy GitHub repo for how to use Azure policy to reach in and check settings inside of a virtual machine. So one of the cool things that happens with policy and some of the agents that are out there in Azure when you have the right agents deployed and everything is the fabric side of things, like the actual Azure side of the world, has the ability to reach into your VMs. Like that's how it can do extension injection and a bunch of other things along the way. But in this case, we can actually use use Azure Policy, which is that kind of free governance service, to reach into your virtual machines and maybe deploy software if it's not there, maybe check the contents of a security group. Like, hey, I would like to audit the members of the local administrators group just to understand what's going on there. Or in this case, I would like to reach into the virtual machine and check and see just what's installed and what's going on, right? Like, are you running my endpoint monitoring solution or endpoint protection solution, whatever it happens to be? So I thought this was just a nice kind of functional example of other things that you can do with policy outside of saying, hey, let's just outright deny everything. No, like here, you can actually model your environment. It comes into dashboards automatically. You have the telemetry now because some of that information will be written back to activity logs depending on how you've turned it on and maybe if you're doing like deploy, if not exists, and things like that.
So I have a question for you, and maybe this could be a future episode if it needs to be, but how does this compare with something like those services in Azure Automation, like the change tracking, or you can do the DSC in Azure Automation, the inventory, some of those Azure Automation services where those are also designed to kind of look into those VMs to work on that guest OS level in those Azure VMs to change, essentially do something like the Azure Policy, track those changes, keep those VMs in that desired state. How does that and this policy work together? How do they complement, differ, or is that another episode?
Might be another episode, but at a high level, they're just kind of different services. So when we think about policy, policy is more around kind of holistic governance, right? And having rails up around not just maybe the platform, but the workloads that are sitting there as well. So there can be limits to policy. Like you can use it to deploy certain things, but not every kind of thing. You can use it to audit certain things, but not every kind of thing today. Like there's a little bit of nuance that goes into that. Policy also, you know, a lot of these actions and audits and things like that, they're captured directly back within Azure logs without any additional services. Like they're just part of policy. When we think about like log analytics and update, or Azure Automation rather, and update management, that is a solution that actually requires you to onboard your clients to log analytics, because the way that solution works and gets all its data is by reading data out of a log analytics workspace, kind of just like that script we were talking about earlier for the bandwidth meter. So that means you need to deploy log analytics. Well, do you go into a paid tier of log analytics? Are you in the free tier? How much retention do you need? There's just all sorts of other questions that kind of come into play versus saying, let's just onboard in a very declarative manner and go into this thing that we can have a little bit more control over. It's not necessarily that one's right or wrong, or one's, you know, worse or better than the other. They just work a little bit differently on the back end.
Got it. All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks, Scott.
Yeah.
Another Friday episode that we'll release on Thursday.
Survived another one.
Yes, we made it through. Well, go enjoy the rest of your day. Get some work done, but not too much. Relax this weekend, and we will talk to you again soon.
All right, cool. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Yep. Bye-bye, Scott. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.